Welcome back, everybody, to the RPO podcast. And today we have an interview with South Dakota safety, the man, the myth, the legend, Isaiah McDaniels. So, Isaiah, what do you think your biggest strength is?
So I would say my biggest strength is honestly that I'm the ultimate overcomer, man. Like, I always beat adversity because I've been through a lot in my life, in terms of just personally, football-wise, sports, you know, et cetera. And overcoming adversity is just a part of me now, and it's helped translate into football because I play with heart and I play with passion, and I never give up in life or in the game of football.
Now, what's something that you think you could improve on?
Something that I honestly think I can improve on is learning how to balance my emotions when it comes to him, because, you know, I am a very passionate player. I play with passion, I play with heart, and sometimes it conflicts what I'm doing with my game, and it, like, distracts me from the job that I have to do and going to the next play, going to the next rep. I'll get worked up. So I would say that's the main thing I have to work on, is working on balancing my emotions on the football field.
When you blocked the punt against Northern Colorado last year, that ended up giving USD a touchdown and the lead, can you walk us through what happened?
Yeah, absolutely. So when we were scouting their punting unit that week, prior to the game, I had noticed that they never put a man on the edge. And the edge is the position I played on punt return, and they never basically put a man on him. So I basically would have free access to the punter at every play, if the shield blocked to the opposite way of me. And our special teams coach at USD, Coach Rob Arridge, he had told our punt return unit before the game that the starting punter was out for that game. So I knew, like, I could take advantage of the opportunity and see if I can, you know, go get home for my team. So the play that I blocked the punt, the punter, initially, he muffed the punt. And so it gave me just enough time to, you know, get a piece of the punt and, you know, block it. And I remember coming back to the sideline, and, like, the whole starting defense was just, like, getting hyped. Everybody was dapping me up, you know, fist bumps and, you know, jumping up and down and celebrating with me. And, you know, I was just so happy that I could, you know, make an impact on the game for my team.
Over your career, you've played a lot of football. What do you think your favorite game that you've ever played in was?
I would honestly say my most favorite game out of all the games I played is probably the Southern California Regional Championship. My senior year of high school, when we played Calabasas High School, they had Tristan Gebbia, Buki Radley House, who's at Oklahoma now, Darnay Holmes, who plays for the New York Giants, Keyshawn Johnson Jr., Nico Hall, Johnny Wilson. They just had four or five star guys all over the field. And it was a high scoring game, and it was probably the best game, most fun game I've ever played against, and it came down to the wire. It came down to overtime. And, you know, we ended up winning that game, and it was just really, really fun.
During the off season and during the season, what do you do to stay in football shape?
Like, I mostly follow the lifting and conditioning program that our strength staff at South Dakota usually provides for us, because, like, in season, you know, they have us on a certain workout regimen that we follow, and then during, like, our breaks, like, if we're on winter break or spring break, they give us like a workout pamphlet, and we basically can follow that. But in other than that, other than what they provide for us, I usually do go on. I go on jogs in the morning, and I live by the Missouri River, and there's a hiking trail right by the Missouri River, so I'll go on that hiking trail and I'll jog that. And then also, in season on off days, I do footwork drills, such as like doing drills with the agility ladder and small hurdles to just keep my footwork at an elite level. And in the off season, I do it even more frequently, especially when I'm back home in San Diego and I'm at the beach. I'll go to the beach and I'll do beach workouts with the small hurdles and the agility ladder, and I'll use the sand to kind of provide that resistance that makes the workout a little bit more intense.
What do you think you have taught your coaches, and what do you think your coaches have taught you? To your training, what do you do when you're not training for football?
When I'm not training for football, I really more so focus on building my mental toughness. So, and what I mean by mental toughness is building, you know, that mental fortitude in my mind, because the game of football is honestly 90% mental and 10% physical. I mean, and once you get to the higher levels, you start to realize that even more. So, you know, I'll read books. I meditate. You know, I practice meditation. I practice stillness. And I practice mindfulness as well. You know, I'll watch TED Talks on mindfulness, just things about the mind, building my mind. And so that's basically what I primarily focus on when I'm not in football, is building my mental toughness.
What was your reaction to when the NCAA postponed all the college football seasons?
It was different, you know, because, you know, we haven't experienced something like this before. You know, when they postponed our season, you know, for others, you know, however they felt about it, it's whatever. But for me, like, you know, it didn't take a major toll on me, because, you know, I come from adversity, man. I overcome. But, you know, with the game that I had last year against South Dakota State, leading up into this next season, I had built so much up for myself, and for the season to just be taken away like that, you know, it did hurt a little bit, you know. But it's all about perspective at the end of the day. And how I look at it is, it just gives me an opportunity, and it gives my team an opportunity to develop more and to get better, you know, because we got a lot of younger guys that came in. We got a really great freshman class that came in at USD this year, actually top five recruiting class in the FCS. And a lot of those guys are coming along real strong, and the season being postponed, I think, really more so helps them, and it helps our team for building depth on their team, so that we have guys that can come in, because this game is a next man up mentality. So really how I looked at it, I changed my perspective and said, you know what, this is a way that we can get better as a team and develop our depth as a team as well so that we can compete for a championship.
Who in the NFL or in any or like call or like who in the NFL do you emulate your game after?
I've honestly the main players that I study are mostly Tyrann Mathieu, Jamal Adams, Marshawn Lattimore, and Micah Fitzpatrick, and also Justin Simmons. But I more so primarily model my game after Tyrann Mathieu, and I have been playing. I have been modeling my game after him since I started truly playing defense when I was in high school. And when it comes to like playing coverage in the slot, playing the deep half safety, playing inside the box, and tackling, like he's just the best to study, man. Like his instincts for the game are just like next level. It's elite and it's different. And we also have a similar stature and a similar size, so he's definitely an inspiration. And just the way he plays, we both play similar. Like he plays fearless. He plays with a lot of heart, a lot of passion on the field. And you know, I just remember when I was in high school, like watching his legendary college football highlights like on repeat, and I was like, yeah, like, you know, that's who I'm gonna be. Like, that's what I'm gonna model my game after. I'm gonna be Isaiah McDaniels, but if I'm gonna study somebody and model my game after, I'm gonna model it after Tyrann Mathieu.
So have you always known you wanted to be a defensive back?
When I first started playing football, I actually started playing running back. And when I was in youth football, all throughout youth football, I was a running back. And I was, you know, that was my true position at heart, running back. And then my coach had mentioned to me as I got a little bit older, it was like my, like when I was in middle school, 7th, 8th grade year, like I said, you should try out corner, you know, just because of how athletic I was. And we already had a bunch of running backs, and we needed more people to play at corner. So I was like, okay, coach, I'll play corner. I ended up playing corner, and my first year playing corner, I had a pick. I had an interception every game except one game. I had 2 interceptions, and then I was like, wow, like I could really make a difference on the defensive side of the ball. And I actually like to hit too. I started liking to hit, and I was like, you know what, maybe I'm going to make that switch to defense. And so that's kind of what started that. And then after that, I just fell in love with the defensive position. And then going into high school, my coach had mentioned to me, well, maybe you should start playing safety because, you know, I had a high level football IQ at such a young age. And being a safety is more so like the quarterback of the defense. And I also like to hit as well, and I could cover, so that's what kind of molded me into the safety position going forward from there.
So your freshman year you redshirted, and then your sophomore year it wasn't as good as your last year, but last year you really took a step and had your best season and put up great numbers. What do you think really attributed to that?
Honestly, man, it was the mentality I had, because honestly what separates the great ones from the good ones is the mindset and the mentality. You know, I came in as a redshirt. I came in from, so coming from high school, I came from a California state championship team, you know, and so I had a pretty high esteem. And then coming into college, you know, I go back down to the bottom of the totem pole, and it was kind of just a humbling experience. And I took it as a humbling experience, and I told myself, I'm going to just learn. I'm going to learn, and I'm going to be a sponge to information. So really what it was for me, man, was just being a sponge, being humble was the main thing, being very humble, being willing to be coached and to be mentored by the older players that were in front of me. Because when I first came in, there were seven veteran safeties ahead of me. As I came in as a freshman, so I took that, I flipped my perspective, and I took it as a learning experience, and I learned from every single one of them. And I took from each one of their games and just added it to my own game. So when the time came for me to step into that role, I was going to be ultimately be ready. And what led to all that, what led to the numbers I had this past season and how well I did in that first start versus South Dakota State was just the preparation, the readiness, working hard every day, putting my head down and working hard every day, and film study. Film study was the key. Like, even though I wasn't a starter on the team, even though I wasn't getting much reps or playing as much up until that point, I was still, like, top five in film minutes in the film log, you know, for our team, just watching film. So I would say film study was really what attributed to, you know, that great production that I had this past season.
So you said you have seven safeties ahead of you. Was there like somebody who you like looked up to and like helped you, in your college football career?
I would definitely say, there was three guys that helped me, immensely. One of them, he's still here at our school, Elijah Reed. He's a senior here and he's always been like a big brother to me. He was actually my host on my recruiting visit to South Dakota when I came out here. So ever since I first met him, he's been like a big brother to me and always has helped me in different ways, just with game and football and life. And then Philip Powell, we both played the same position, the Rover position, which is the hybrid safety position here at South Dakota. And he was always like a big brother too. Like, he always like would coach me. Like, anytime I asked him a question, he would help me out and he would coach me up on reps, and he always told me to trust myself, he always told me to believe in myself and stuff like that. And so he was definitely a great help, especially because he was a playmaker here and he made a lot of plays, and so he really inspired me to be that, you know, that next generation playmaker on defense at the safety position at South Dakota. And also, lastly, Andrew Gray, man, like, he was basically like a player coach, and he was a playmaker too. And he was, when I was a freshman here, he was the starting safety, starting Rover, starting safety, and he always coached me up, always gave me great advice. He was basically my mentor while he was here, and I honestly cannot say that I would have produced the way I produce or been the player I am today in college football without all those three guys. They really helped me a lot.
And so your high school team won the California State Championship. What do you think the similarities and differences are from high school football to college football?
I would say really the game speed, but I would also say it's the mental part of the game, man. Like, it's just the different concepts that you get in terms of, you know, passing routes, different plays, the way the game is ran. It's just mentally challenging at the next level, from the college level. And because in high school, man, you're just out there playing ball. Like, you know, ball is just ball. But once you get to college, everyone's a baller, man. Like, everyone's a baller. Everyone's athletically gifted. So what separates you is how mentally advanced are you in the game of football? How high is your football IQ? So I would say those are the two main differences once you go from the high school level to the college level is the game speed and how mentally advanced the game gets.
And how is South Dakota keeping their athletes safe during the pandemic?
Oh, they've been really great with providing us with the proper procedures and protocols on keeping us safe. And we've been very, very, they've been very, very adamant on us about wearing our mask when we go into the facilities, whatever facility it is, whether it's the weight room, the film rooms, locker rooms, whatever may in the dome, whatever it may be. And in the weight room, You know, we wear our mask in the weight room. Our strength coach, Cleet McLeod, he went through all the protocols of how we sanitize the weights before and after our lifts. You know, we have hand washing stations, hand soap stations in the weight room too. And so we've just been, they've just been very great at being very, communicating with us the proper procedures and protocols of it all, and making sure they're reminding us to wear our masks, wash our hands, and, you know, cleaning the weights before and after our lifts and stuff like that. So we've been definitely great and on top of all that.
And my final question is, what do you think we can expect to see from you in South Dakota this year?
Okay, that's a good question. So my biggest goal, you know, my biggest goal has always been to be the best teammate I could possibly be. And if that means being a leader, then I'm going to be a leader and lead guys and show guys the way and be the best teammate I can be. And also to become an All-American. You know, that's always been one of my biggest goals, to be a first-team All-American. And as a team here at USD, you know, we're always competing and striving to win a championship here, regardless. And during this quarantine period that we've been in, you know, our team, we've just worked extremely hard in all aspects to achieve the goals that we have set for us moving forward. So I would say to expect to see a dynamic team coming up here soon, once we get into our spring schedule. Yeah, and we're definitely going to handle business like we always do and work hard.
Well, I really enjoyed talking to you today, and I hope we can talk again another time.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me on your podcast. And to all the viewers, thank you for watching, and all you guys have a blessed day. Thank you again.
Thank you. That was Isaiah McDaniels from South Dakota, the amazing safety. Next, we have, thank you, please stick around after this quick sponsor break, and we'll come back to you with our next segment.
Have our mid-win-by quarter season predictions for Offensive Rookie of the Year, Defensive Rookie of the Year, Comeback Player of the Year, Coach of the Year, and MVP. So, first off, we'll start at the bottom, work our way up. Offensive Rookie of the Year, Justin Herbert. Originally, I said Joe Burrow. Justin Herbert's been putting on a show. Unless Tua decides he wants to be better than Justin Herbert, which he is. He's better than Justin Herbert. But Justin Herbert has more time to show his worth. I don't know what Tua is actually like in the NFL. If he's anything like he was in college, he will win Offensive Rookie of the Year. But right now, Justin Herbert is the clear, is in my mind, the clear winner for that position. He's putting up a fight. He's like carrying this Chargers offense to close wins. Not getting the wins, but they're really close. Therefore, he's my Offensive Rookie of the Year. Next, Defensive Rookie of the Year. I'm still going Chase Young. After his week one performance, it hasn't been as dazzling. He has missed two games out of six. So there's that. He missed the Brown. He missed a lot of the Browns game and the Ravens game, and then came back against the Giants. But he's, in my mind, still the winner of that award. Then we have just the Rookie of the Year. That's going to Chase Young, too. He's phenomenal talent. And, you know, he may not get a lot of sacks. He gets a lot of TFLs, a lot of tackles, and he forces a lot of plays. Against the Giants this week, he put Daniel Jones in a position where he had to throw the ball away, leading to a pick because of a terrible throw. Therefore, I think Chase Young will win that award. Comeback Player of the Year, Alex Smith should win this award. He may not play a lot of games unless Kyle Allen is really bad. No matter what, he should win the award. You're coming back from career, potentially career-ending, life-ending injury, and playing in a game and getting sacked four times. You deserve this award. Don't care if you're not good. You deserve it. But in terms of who will actually win this award, really, Alex Smith is going to be one of the, Alex Smith should win this award. That's all I'm saying. MVP, Aaron Rodgers. I'm giving you a top three because there's a lot to choose from here. Like, a lot of people who are playing really good football. Josh, Aaron Rodgers is my third. After last week's performance, the pick six and a pick and not playing too great, it went down from second to third for me. He's really up there with Josh Allen, who is my second. Josh Allen has a rocket of an arm. Is carrying this Bills deep offense with Stephon Diggs. He's second in yards, will be first at the end of the year, should be, because Dak got injured. And then first is Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson is playing like a monster. A monster. And he's leading his team to be one of the only teams with a 5-0 6-0 record so far. 5-0 record. And yeah. And if you don't want quarterbacks, we'll say Derrick Henry should win. In terms of carrying and not carrying a team this year. I mean, but he's just phenomenal. He's just a phenomenal player. Coach of the Year, it's not going to be John Harbaugh. Ron Rivera, potentially helping this team to one win and fighting through cancer through most of it. But I think maybe Pete Carroll. Pete Carroll and Matt LaFleur are two people who I really think could win this award. It's really, most times, whoever the MVP coaches is normally who wins it. Those are my quarter season predictions for the awards. If you want to listen to my predictions and reactions for week 6 and week 7, I love for you to stick around, and I'll see you. Week 6 is in the books, everybody. There wasn't a Thursday night game because of the Tuesday night game. But here are my reactions to the game. Texans-Titans. Titans win 42-36 in overtime. There was this really weird play by Mike Vrabel where it looked like he put 12 men on the field on purpose to save timeouts. So that, because they were down, and the defense stopped them, and then they drove downfield to tie the game to go into overtime. It was really clutch by Mike Vrabel and the Titans to win the game. Ravens, Eagles, 30-28, Ravens. Eagles need to put in Jalen Hurts. Carson Wentz, I'm sorry, but put in Jalen Hurts. It's Jalen Hurts' time. It's Jalen Hurts City. In Philly right now. Make a change. Make a change. Doug Peterson. If you want to win games, put in the better quarterback. And that is Jalen Hurts. Falcons, Vikings. Falcons get their first win of the season against the Vikings. 40-23. Browns, Steelers. Baker gets benched in a 7-38 loss to the Steelers. He threw two picks. One of them was a pick six. So that's not good for Baker. Now, I do think he'll still be the starting quarterback. But be on the lookout for maybe a quarterback change. Bengals, Colts, 27-31. Colts come back against the Bengals. And Joe Burrow and the Bengals still only have one win. Jags, Lions stomp all over the Jaguars. And DeAndre Swift had a career game so far with 142 yards and two touchdowns, which was great football by the Lions. Bears, Panthers. Bears, maybe a dark horse in the NFL season this year. 23-16. Giants, Washington. This game made me want to pull the hair out of my head. I'm a Washington football team fan, and I love the decision to go for it on two. Made me a little nervous. But Kyle Allen, you have a wide open lane to go out to the left. You take that, we win. And maybe don't throw the ball into the ground and don't fumble it, and we would win. It's really cool. It's not. Not trying to sound mean. But you're an NFL quarterback. You need to know. Like, you go. You keep running to the edge. We win the game. It's not Ron Rivera's fault. It's Dustin Hopkins and Kyle Allen. If Dustin Hopkins makes a 47, my bad. Yard field goal, we win. Kyle Allen knows how to hold onto a football and keep running to a pylon, we win. If Kyle Allen also knows how to not throw the ball into the dirt on a 2-point conversion that would win us the game, we win. Simple as that. Broncos. I'm sorry, I have to cool down a little bit. Broncos, Patriots. Broncos upset the Patriots 18-12. Patriots quarterback next year. Draft. Jets. This is 24-0. Dolphins. The Jets fans. You'll be saying Trevor Lawrence to the Jets jersey next year. That's all I have to say about this game. Bucks. Packers. They've played like, they played like a, overall they just didn't play well. Two picks, one pick six by Aaron Rodgers. Bucks defense was lights out, and Tom Brady looked like Tom Brady. Rams, 49ers. Niners come away with the victory 24-16. And NFC North isn't really much of a competition to win the division, but it's a competition to see who will come in second. Bills, Chiefs. Not great game by the Bills, to be quite honest with you. Really disappointed with Josh Allen. Expected more from him. Chiefs, good game. You know, you played really good. You can't deny that. Cardinals, Cowboys. This game made me so happy. Washington's still in the NFC East race, and the Cowboys got smoked by the Cardinals 38-10. Woo! NFC East really is a laughingstock of the division. 5-18-1, the division record. Next week, week 7, my predictions. Giants Eagles play on Thursday night at 8:20. Eagles win their second game of the year. Panthers, Saints walk all over the Panthers after bye week this week. Bills, Jets get shut out 2 weeks in a row. Bengals, Browns have a bounce back week against the Bengals, which is really good for them because they really need that. Washington Cowboys, Washington wins. Now you may laugh at me and say I'm being biased. Look at the Arizona game. Dallas has one of the worst defenses in the league. And Washington looked pretty damn good in the second half against the Giants. Andy Dalton? I don't know, man. It doesn't look to be. Find another quarterback. Andy isn't your guy. Find another back. He's a good backup. Can't beat him. Don't beat him. You don't have Dak. Your season's over. Just give up. Tank for Trevor. No, don't tank for Trevor. You have Dak. But pay Dak his money. That's the answer. Answer all your problems. If you paid Dak his money, you wouldn't be in this predicament. Pack Texans. Packers have a bounce back week against the Texans. Win by 10. Lions, Falcons. Falcons go back to the losing ways, blowing another 15-point lead against the Lions. Steelers, Titans. One of these teams is going to leave without a 5-0 record. Guess who that team's going to be? Let me give you a little hint. It's the Steelers. Seahawks, Cardinals. Seahawks continue their winning ways against the Cardinals. Kyler Murray has put on a show. It's going to be really close. But Russell Wilson shows why he's going to win the MVP this year. Chiefs, Broncos. Chiefs just decided they want to step over the Broncos. And almost put the shutout 7-42. Final score. Chargers, Jaguars. Chargers can beat the Jaguars. And Justin Herbert gets his first win in the NFL as a starter. 49ers, Patriots. Niners beat the Patriots as Cam throws one interception, fumbles twice. Bucks, Raiders on Sunday Night Football. Raiders win. Bears, Rams. Bears continue their winning ways against the Rams. And Nick Foles looks like he is the real deal. Those are my predictions and reactions to Week 6 and 7 of the NFL season. If you like this week, if you like predictions and reactions, check out college football, which comes up next. We have my predictions for some of the games this week for college football. Let's hop right into it, everyone. First, on Friday, we have Illinois taking on West 14-ranked Wisconsin. I forgot Big Ten is coming back this week, everybody. Wisconsin pulls up the W out of their butt. Alabama, Tennessee. Alabama shuts out Tennessee and puts in their third string quarterback. Syracuse, Clemson. Clemson scores another 73 points. Ohio State, Nebraska. Ohio State coming away with a W on this one. NC State, North Carolina. 23-14. Should be a good game. North Carolina wins. Kansas State wins. Central Carolina and Georgia Southern. Coastal Carolina wins. FIU versus Marshall. Marshall. Notre Dame, Pittsburgh. Notre Dame. Oklahoma, Iowa State. Iowa State. Penn State crushes Indiana. Virginia Tech decides they just want to step on and squish Wake Forest into the ground. Michigan and Minnesota should be a good game. Michigan wins, though. And Miami just decides to flick Virginia away with their fingers. Cincinnati sweeps away SMU and BYU. Snaps Texas State out of existence. Now, last week, week 7, on Wednesday, Coastal Carolina narrowly edged out a win against Louisiana, 30-27. SMU beat Tulane in overtime with a bad score of 37-34. BYU stomped on Houston, 43-26. Alabama comes back in the second half, doesn't let Georgia score any points in the second half, 41-24. Clemson scores 73 points against Georgia Tech versus Georgia Tech 7. Miami, 31-19. South Carolina upsets Auburn, 30-22. Kentucky upsets Tennessee, 34-7. Louisville loses to number 4 ranked Notre Dame, 12-7. Texas A&M beats Mississippi State, 28-14. Seminoles upset North Carolina, 31-28. Virginia Tech stomps over Boston College, 40-14. Both the Cincinnati, those were the only games of the week that were extremely important. Thank you all for listening to the RPO podcast this week. Be sure to follow our show, my socials, on at the RPO podcast on Instagram, where we post breaking news updates and give you latest stuff on the podcast, just in case episodes are postponed due to games being postponed. This is Ry Cobbs, and I'll see you next week.